that not enough for you, Senator Sedman? I call the meeting the Bicameral Permanent Fund Working Group to order. Today is Monday, January 20th, 2020, and the time is 10:05. We are meeting in the Senate Finance Room in Juneau, Alaska. Please turn off all your cell phones. Today I'm joined by Representative Wohl, Representative Christ-Hopkins, and Representative Merrick. Senator Bishop?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Good morning, everyone. Senators Olson, Hughes, and Stedman are all here.
Thank you. Today we're also joined by other members of the legislature, and I hope I've seen all of them. Thank you, Senator, Senate President Kathy Geisel, and Senator Josh Rivack, Representative Andy Josephson, Representative Sarah Hannon, and Representative Bart LeBon. I think I've got everybody. I want to thank our LIL monitor, Madison Truitt and Amanda Kraft, for assisting us today. Presentations and follow-up materials have been posted online at akledge.gov. And for today's agenda, we're going to review our draft report. Consideration of this agenda. Before you'll find the draft bicameral permanent fund working group report dated January 2020. This report represents a summary of the work the working group has done over the last 7 months, including a history of the creation of the working group, a brief history of the Alaskan Permanent Fund and Dividend, a synopsis of each of our meetings, the working group assignments that members completed, and models the working group evaluated. House Concurrent Resolution 101 created the working group and charged us with making policy recommendations on the future use of the earnings of the Alaskan Permanent Fund. This report does not make a recommendation on changes to the Permanent Fund dividend formula or the size of the Permanent Fund dividend check. However, we are able to establish and recommend that the Permanent Fund should be protected from inflation and the legislature should not utilize more of the earnings reserve than is outlined in SB 26 from 2018. Otherwise known as the percent of market value. I'd also like to point out that our last working group meeting, we evaluated several different scenarios relating to the use of the earnings reserve and the size of the dividend check. And I was pleased that we developed a framework for modeling the options as we head into the second session of the 31st legislature. Something to keep in mind in that these models represent a snapshot in time. It only assumed a $50 million supplemental and was based off from the 2019 spring revenue forecast. Since that time, the fall forecast has been released, creating an additional shortfall of about $200 million and a preliminary supplemental estimate of roughly $230 million as well. Co-Chair Bishop, would you like to add anything before we open the floor to members for comments and discussion?
No, ma'am.
Any member have any comment or? Then I guess we're at the point of thanking all of you, thanking the groups for being part of Senator Hughes.
I'm sorry, Madam Chair, thank you. I wasn't sure what order and if we were really just going to close out if we didn't have comments, because there are some things I'd like to discuss if this is the time.
It would be the time.
Yeah, I want to thank the ones that worked on the report, and there was one of the edits that I suggested was in the first paragraph of the executive summary as far as what we were tasked to do. And originally it had stated that we were tasked to submit a report to the legislature in January of 2020, but when I went back to the resolution, we were actually tasked to make policy recommendations. So I guess my question to the chair, to the co-chairs is, what policy recommendations are we making in this report?
I would say the strongest policy recommendation that we are making is that we need to adhere to the structured draw, no matter what kind of formula we're looking at as far as the dividend and what we're looking as far as revenues for the state.
Okay, thank you. I did make a recommend, one of the recommendations I made was not included in the final draft, and I would like to discuss that a bit, if I could, Madam Chair. In the final paragraph of the executive summary, which to me is the most important because it is what most people will read, of course, and I had suggested that in the very final sentence that it would read, I'm going to start kind of midway in that final sentence, to insert the words, right, to cross the words to that end. And one of the reasons why I want to cross the words to that end is because that implies that the structured draw itself takes care of inflation proofing, and it doesn't. Indirectly it might, because it might allow some funds outside the structured draw to inflation proof the corpus, but just by sheer fact that you do a limited structured draw, there's no automatic inflation proofing, if that makes sense, if that earnings reserve is still available for other things. So that phrase to that end really isn't appropriate as a conjunction. And also, I had requested that we insert in place of to that end the words, a majority of members agree that use of permanent fund earnings must stay within draw limits established by a structure like the percent of market value law enacted in 2018. I, for one, and I've spoken with other members at this table, have some concern. I did make a suggestion regarding the POMV. No one took me up on it. And so I am not really comfortable right now with saying that this is the way you have to go. And so I have a suggested amendment that I'm hoping we all can agree on, because I think it really gets to the heart of what that really means. And so instead, where it says to that end, you would strike all of it, and it would read, also, members agree that use of permanent fund earnings for state services and dividends must be limited in order to protect the permanent fund. So it still says we all agree that you have to limit it, because if you just spend willy-nilly, we will have a problem. I'm not comfortable with the way that it's stated unless the words a majority of members agree, if you want to leave it the way it is. And I have copies of my suggested language if the chair would like to see that sentence.
Let's take an at ease while we get copies. Call this meeting back to order. Senator Hughes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I am going to withdraw my suggestion. It wasn't a formal amendment at the earlier stage, and instead go with what I had originally submitted to the co-chairs and the ones that were working on the draft. And so what I'm going to propose is that we strike in this, we are on the executive summary, the final paragraph, and we'll strike the words to that end and replace with a majority of members agree that, et cetera.
Actually, could you just read out the et cetera for the record?
How about if I read it the way it would end up for that, and I'll read the entire sentence. The entire sentence. While agreement on the size of a dividend may still be difficult to attain, members agree that the permanent fund must be protected from inflation so that future generations of Alaskans may benefit from it. and a majority of members agree that use of permanent fund earnings must stay within draw limits established by a structure like the percent of market value law enacted in 2018.
Thank you. Senator Stedman, do you still have some comments you'd like to make?
Oh, yeah. Madam Chairman, there's a huge misconception here at the table. We've spent some time debating the percent of market value concept. In fact, it goes back to Governor Murkowski's time. And we've rolled through and we've fast-forwarded here. A couple years ago, we put in a percent of market value structure that limited the draw, which, Madam Chairman, you referenced, 5.25 to be 5%. But the comments about it doesn't take care of inflation. That is precisely what it does. These endowment style structure is a proven over decades and decades of use all over the world. And what drives the inflation proofing is a draw rate lower than the consumption of all the earnings, including what you would lose in purchasing power. So that rate is set by your asset allocation, which is set by market returns. That's what drives the 5%. That's why it's not 8%, because the historic returns globally can't produce the income to inflation-proof and protect the purchasing power of the particular portfolio you're talking about. In this case, we're talking about the permanent fund here at the state of Alaska. So to miss that point, to me, is phenomenal. It is fundamental to the structure. And to have language that may give flexibility and cover to the legislature, the appropriating body, to appropriate funds above what the portfolio can return with inflation and protect itself and protect the future Alaskans is a fundamental abrogation of our responsibility for future generations of Alaskans. It's not our generation that should be consuming all of the revenue and wealth created from our oil basin. We have to leave some of the wealth created in our generation for future Alaskans that, quite frankly, aren't even born yet. And I don't want to see weasel words in this report. I want to see the legislature, regardless of what the dividend is, protect the future value, current and future value of the permanent fund. The dividend, quite frankly, in my opinion, just defaults out. Number one, we have to protect the permanent fund. And for those of you that don't think the legislature will spend it, I would like to remind you that both political parties, have had motions on the floor of the bodies to do just that. So this is not an issue that resides on one side of the political spectrum or the other. It's right in the middle of the table. And we can go back, Madam Chairman and Mr. Chairman, to the Constitutional Budget Reserve, which a lot of us in the legislature worked very hard in building up. And it was amassed well over $10 billion. And we have now depleted it to the proposed budget in front of us by this session, which would leave about $500 million. So those of you that don't think the legislature will spend down the permanent fund if the window is open, I would like to disagree. And we have the CBR for proof over the last several years. So I would like to see this committee hold firm on whatever language we put in to make it very clear to the public that regardless of the financial demands today, over the last several years, when I'm referencing today and the next several as we work through this, that we do not deplete the purchasing power of the permanent fund because it is just takes a majority vote on both bodies and a signature by the governor, and we could spend the whole bloody thing, the entire earnings reserve.
Senator Bishop.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thanks for the comments, Senator Stebbins. Just another small point I'd like to put in there, that the other good thing for us at finance and the legislature as a whole, the percent of market value, another very good point in that is that we have predictability on what earnings will be for the next year's budgeting cycle. And so that percent of market value is an important piece of legislation that we passed, and it gives us predictability for building future budgets.
Senator Hughes.
Thank you, and I appreciate Senator Stedman's comments and his concern that we truly protect the permanent fund for future generations, and I very agree generally with that. I just want to eliminate any confusion. When I stated that the POMV draw does not in itself directly inflation-proof, as long as we have the court ruling and as long as the legislature with a simple majority vote can go outside that limited draw, that's our problem. And so our only sure way is similar to what was done in fiscal year 20, where we actually took some of those earning reserve funds, I'm trying to remember what the end amount was, and put it into the corpus. So that is what I meant by that it doesn't, just because you take a limited draw, doesn't necessarily, the way our courts have ruled, the way our law is, that that we have really secured that inflation proofing, and so that was my point that I wanted to eliminate the confusion. Thank you.
Representative Christ Tompkins.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. I agree with my senator that permanent fund must be protected, and I think sort of the order of priority is without a permanent fund, you don't have a permanent fund dividend, and I really sort of see it following that way. And I say that as somebody who, while pretty passionate about the future and integrity and intergenerational solvency of the permanent fund, also believes in the permanent fund dividend as an institution. So, you know, that really must be done. I appreciate this report, and I think a general consensus, even including this amendment, I know just from personal conversations, I think everybody at the table believes that we must protect the integrity of the permanent fund itself. However, I don't think this report is going to create an orb of protection for the permanent fund into the future. And as much as SB 26 was a watershed moment in terms of how the state's going to manage this asset, there's, in my mind, ongoing risk to the permanent fund, and that risk will always exist. And I mean, the risk is so great because the stakes are so great that I don't believe statute alone or sort of a consensus that may evaporate from legislature to legislature, decade to decade into the future, is sufficient to protect an asset that is really the best thing Alaska has going. I appreciate the work that this group has done, but I think ultimately the legislature has to look to hardening the draw in the Constitution and providing some degree of protection that is inviolate, and not just, you know, a report and an executive summary that can protect this asset in a way that, as whims change and political winds blow, the permanent fund will truly become permanent. So I think that's just a point in terms of the outlook coming out of this work group that I think is important to share. And I think the second comment I want to offer is the permanent fund dividend. This executive summary is not really touching on in terms of the formula of it. I really appreciated Senator Hughes's comments on the record earlier this year, or last year rather, in terms of what that dividend formula can look like. I think we all know the dividend needs to be reexamined. And I think sort of tying the permanent fund dividend to my previous point about protecting the permanent fund, so long as the dividend formula is unresolved, which it is at present, there is going to be political risk to the permanent fund, not because there are people who want to raid the permanent fund for the sake of raiding the permanent fund, although, I mean, I think there's lots of ways to look at it, but because there is huge unresolved business in Alaska. And so long as there's unresolved business, that is the permanent fund dividend formula, I think the permanent fund becomes the potential collateral damage there. So, I mean, I hope, you know, this executive summary is making no recommendations and on the permanent fund dividend formula, and I think there's a lot of potential for us to work on that. And even though I have a somewhat different perspective than Senator Hughes on what that formula should look like, I recognize it's very important that there has to be resolution on that question in order to protect the permanent fund. Because, you know, I think, you know, last year and this year, the permanent fund is likely to be not overdrawn, but the composition of the legislature may well be different next year. We will have future governors with very different perspectives, and unless we can sort of put to bed some of these issues, there's that risk, and that risk really concerns me. So, yeah, I appreciate the previous comments, and I appreciate both of you, Madam Co-Chair, Mr. Co-Chair, for leading us through the process.
Are there any other comments? Senator Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Mr. Chair. Senator Stedman brings up a good point that, and he understands, having worked with Senator Stedman since he first got here, over 10 years ago, he has a very good understanding of what the nuts and bolts are of some of the financial situations we find ourselves into and what they mean. And POMV is one of those issues that I think, at least for my constituents, when you talk about POMV, they don't have a clear understanding of what it says or what it does. And so there, when you start throwing around terms like that, it's easy to get confused and it's easy to misinterpret something. So as I see that he's correct in that POMV does have those aspects to it, there's the chance of misinterpretation because it implies that the methodology that we're going to be using may be something that's going to be detrimental to what they consider their sacred cow, which is the PFD, as they look into the future. And what I think what we're really trying to do is to agree that the permanent fund should be protected. And to, in order not to have a misinterpretation of that, I guess my idea is that I'm in favor of the amendment because it makes it very clear and that people don't have to get down to the nuts and bolts in order or have a strong financial background in order to understand it.
Anybody else like to comment? Senator Hughes?
And I just want to say there, as we know, the way the percent of market value works is it's a percentage off the value of the entire fund. And over a number of years, it works. Yes, it works. And that's why a lot of folks that are very skilled in fiscal matters recommend it. However, if you had a turn of a series of really bad years, your 5% draw, what will be 5% here going into the future, could actually could eat into that corpus essentially. So, you know, we haven't really had much discussion in this working group about other options, and I am not recommending this, but here's just an example of another way that you could actually look at how to deal with this situation. And that was go back to the original formula, but before you divide up what is for the PFD and what is for state services, you subtract out the inflation proof and move it into the corpus before you do that split of 50-50. So you'd always, always, always be dealing with the earnings because, as you know, the original formula only deals with the earnings. So you would never, if you had a series of bad years, you would never have to worry about dipping into the corpus at all. So that is just over the long term, yes, the POMV seems to be a good fiscal model, but I just wanted to point out, and we've been really blessed and fortunate in this country as far as you know, we do have occasional bad years, but they don't go on for a long time. But I just want to make that point that you there are other ways where you could just focus on the earnings. And if you were to subtract the inflation proofing before the 50-50 split in the original formula, you actually would be very similar to the type of draw you would with a POMV, but it would always be based on the earnings and never put the corpus at risk.
Senator Stedman.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Again, the percent of market value, where you look at the entire portfolio and you market to market, in other words, you calculate at some point every year the liquidation value of all your assets, including real estate, bonds, stocks, everything. Add it all up. You normally go back 4 years, 5 years, 6 years, and take an average of those ending values to smooth it out. And you do that so you can basically smooth out your revenue stream, as the co-chair here had mentioned, the predictability, not only for the dividends, but for the amount of monies that are used in a budget or whatever, you know, target you're going to use those funds for. That's why you do that. It would be ludicrous for the Alaska legislature to try to reinvent how you manage portfolios for the long-term best interests of the shareholders or the citizens of the state or whatever, you know, you're looking at. This methodology, again, has been implemented all over the world on virtually all of the large endowments and sovereign wealth funds on the planet. If it was structurally flawed, severely flawed, it would have showed up in the financial meltdown of 2008 and 9 and 10, when most of the banking industry got wiped out and the industrial base got crippled. Before that, we had a meltdown in the year 2000, where we had the dot-com blow up. We had a huge sell-off in October of 1985. We had a collapse in 1929. We don't need, Madam Chairman, to reinvent the wheel on some politically expedient way. What we need to do is protect this wealth fund. And the way you do it is the way you run and manage a percent of market value. Inflation will take care of itself over time if your draw rate is sufficiently low enough to allow your gross earnings to exceed your inflation plus your draw. It is true that when you have several years of bear markets, you can have a movement down in your overall value of your portfolio, and that is smoothed out by your look back and your averaging. You can't avoid that in the financial markets. Even if you buy a bond that pays you a dividend every 6 months for 20 years, your market value of your bond is moving daily if you recognize it or not. You can hold it to maturity and get the face value, but it still fluctuates with interest rates and economic conditions. The portfolio, the permanent fund, is well diversified and continues to diversify even further by every decade. It keeps spreading it out to protect the state from economic shocks, in particular different asset classes. That's why we have multiple meetings in both finance rooms on the asset allocation of the permanent fund and why are they in this particular asset class at this weighting. So when you have the responsibility of sitting in the legislature, you need to rely on experts in particular fields, in this case the financial field dealing with the permanent fund, and we bring them in. We bring Callan in, who's a consultant for the permanent fund, and they sit at the end of the table with the permanent fund people, and we talk about the permanent fund. We, in my opinion, it would be an absolute disaster for the legislature to reinvent how you run sovereign wealth funds and experiment with the Alaska Permanent Fund. We know how to do it by allowing the other sovereign wealth funds around the world to lead the way. There's one at Harvard that always seems to be on the cutting edge, and a lot of the other ones catch up over a decade or two decades. We don't need to lead. What we need to do is follow, allow the permanent fund to grow, hopefully to get it to $80 to $100 billion, and continue on. So, you know, it's not that we're trying to be overly complicated with our structure. We're trying to keep it simple for the public, as Senator Olson said, so the public can understand. But we have communities also in the state that run this very, very similar model. The city of Sitka has run it for over 20 years. It's nothing new. And having too heavy of a draw is as detrimental to that little portfolio as having too big of a draw is to us. And the other comment I'd like to make, Madam Chairman, is our earnings reserve is such a significant size that it's going to continue to grow and become an ever-increasing spending target, in my opinion. And the more we can slide from or transfer from the earnings reserve, which is spendable with a 21 and 11 vote and a signature by the governor, to the constitutionally protected corpus, the better. Last year we moved about $5 billion. I hope this year we move more. Because as long as there's billions of dollars sitting there to be easily spent, it's just a target.
Thank you, Senator Steadman. I wish, actually, in this conversation, as far as the management of fund, I wish I had a list in front of me, because I know that actually our fund has won multiple international awards. And I also know that other sovereign wealth funds are looking at our fund as a source of how best to operate. So I just want to put that on record. Actually, we have been very, especially in the last couple of years, we have been in the forefront internationally with our fund and the management of our fund. And I think we forget that when we're arguing over what we as a legislature, our lane is the lane of appropriation. It's not the lane of asset allocation. It's not the lane of management of the fund. It's how we appropriate the earnings reserve account. And while I, you know, I very much appreciate everything Senator Steadman said, I just do want to say we are also very, very fortunate because we have excellent managers and we are actually doing quite well. Thank you. Any other comments? Representative Wall.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I believe this committee came together, the initial directive, I may be mistaken, was to talk about how to deal with the earnings of the permanent fund. It wasn't the permanent fund dividend specifically, it was the permanent fund. And as we all know, last year was a big sea change in that we, for the first time in history, used earnings from the permanent fund to fund our state government. And those funds are now competing with PFD, because traditionally the permanent fund funded the PFD and oil funded state government. And of course, recently we used savings. But now we're at a point where we really can't do that anymore. So the earnings of the permanent fund are being used for state government, and that's, I think, the crux of this whole thing, and we need to protect that indefinitely, because we don't know what oil revenue is going to do, and it took a massive hit recently, and who knows what the future holds, but no one here is going to predict that oil is going to come back and save the day. Look at Saudi Arabia. They've just decided to sell their oil company, and they want to create an endowment that they can live on in perpetuity as well. And I think that's the responsible thing to do. And as my colleague sitting next to me from Sitka and across from me from Sitka have both alluded to, the draw, I think, needs to be enshrined in such a way that it can't be violated. And that is the rule of a endowment, that if you stick to your rules and don't overdraw, then it should live in perpetuity and be able to fund the things that we need to fund. And how we split up those earnings for state government or other things, that's another discussion. But as long as we stick to that rule, because we don't know what oil revenue is going to do. And over time, if you've looked at what's happened in Alaska since 1987, it's been on decline, earnings from the pipeline. So that may change. I hope it does. But if you look at history, we have to deal with that. And so I think that this group came together to look at what's going to happen to the earnings of the permanent fund. And I think we need to put hard, fast rules on the draw and not exceeding it. And also mentioned in this document is, I guess, $1.5 billion that's in the earnings reserve, which is monies that we didn't use to pay statutory formula, PFD. And there's people looking at that money and saying, well, we didn't spend it then, so it's available now. We can use that to pay surplus PFD money. And so that's happening right now. And as was mentioned before, it's not by party. It's just there's different people on different sides saying, well, that money is still kind of available. It would exceed the draw, but it will only do it this once. And I think that's a very slippery slope. And I think we should not think that $1.5 billion that we didn't spend to fulfill statutory PFD is somehow still available. I think it's in the fund. It should stay in the fund, and it should be locked in. So, you know, I think Representative Kreis-Tompkins mentioned constitutionalizing the draw, the POMV draw at 5% or what have you. And I think ultimately that's the only way to really safeguard it so that 51% of the legislators can't suddenly decide that they need to access it to pay out a bonus check or something like that. So I hopefully we will figure out a way to stick to that. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any other comments? Senator Bishop?
No, just one brief one, and I've got a motion. Just for those in the public that are watching at home and those in the room, I tell you this, the executive summary and the historical look back is very important in pages 7, 8, and 9. I just personally believe the answer was there, and we had it in 18, but we weren't able to get it over the top. So with that being said, I move to adopt and finalize the bicameral permanent fund working group report.
As amended.
It's
Senator Hughes.
Madam Chair, I appreciate that that motion, and I do want to put on the record in regard to, I think it's page 9, earnings versus market value. There's reference, and I'm not going to make any suggestions as far as edits, because to me the crucial thing is what are we recommending, and that's in the executive summary. However, there is some suggestion that the original formula is inherently kind of bad and volatile, and I just want to get on the record that had we been better over the years, living within our means and being more careful with saving, so we are now we aren't in the situation where the PFD is pitted against paying for state services. You know, the original formula in itself is not inherently wrong. It's all the circumstances that led up to where we are is why the report mentioned what it did. But I don't really agree with the fact that it's inherently wrong and volatile. Had we done what we should have done, so I'm not going to say this is a horrible report. I can't allow it to go forward because of that, because the most crucial part is the executive summary. But I do kind of disagree with the tone in that section, and I just wanted to get it on the record. Thank you.
Any other comments? Representative Wall.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is a small point, but I just noticed this upon reading this the other day. Just for contrast, in 1970, this is page 4, in 1970, unrestricted revenue was $165 million for the state of Alaska. And of that, $10 million was motor fuel tax. So 6% of our revenue back then was motor fuel tax. I bet that $10 million, and I think Senator Bishop knows a thing or two about motor fuel tax, but it's interesting to notice motor fuel tax was 6% of our revenue.
So unless I see any dissenting votes, we will pass Senator Bishop's amendment.
Motion.
Okay, I do want to thank each and every one of you in the working group. You did put some long, hard hours into your work, and all the support staff that made this group possible, and I wouldn't begin to name them all. There are some that are sitting behind us to the left, but I know each of your offices put a lot of work into this, and I truly appreciate it. This is our last meeting. My co-chair and I will finalize this report and deliver it to the presiding officers within the next few days. And if there's nothing else to come before this working group, we will be adjourning. The time is that 10 of, 10:52.